On April 21st, Ireland's ambassador to the U.S., Geraldine Byrne-Naisid, visited DePaul University's Holt-Schneider Center to discuss the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. With the help of the Consulate General of Ireland and the DePaul Irish Studies Program, Ambassador Byrne-Naisid was able to speak to DePaul students and faculty, as well as other community members. Professor Mary McCain, the director of the Irish Studies Program, explained to me the Good Friday's agreement and its legacy.
Northern Ireland had been divided between these two communities, which have the labels or names of Protestant and Catholic for quite a long time. In the late 1960s, the tensions between these two groups led to a period of political violence called the Troubles, which lasted roughly from 1968 to the Good Friday Agreement of 1998. And although the communities are still deeply divided right up to the present day, those divisions now take nonviolent forms, you know, for the most part. The political violence is greatly, greatly, greatly diminished since the Good Friday Agreement. And it, as you saw, is hailed as having brought peace and stability to a region that really sorely needed that kind of change. Yeah. That kind of
the ambassador's speech highlighted the journey to the agreement itself, the success and failures of the agreement, and what to expect for the future of Northern Ireland. She also answered some other questions regarding Brexit and restorative justice. After the ambassador's speech, the audience was presented with the opportunity to ask some questions. However, I saved my questions for the end, as I was allowed to ask a few questions alone with the ambassador myself. We discussed the Good Friday Agreement, but we also discussed things like economic partnerships and prosperity between our two countries. We discussed foreign policy regarding the Ukraine war, and I asked a little bit more about what she meant by restorative justice. Here's that conversation now.
Pressing question. So how's Chicago been?
Amazing. It's been less than 24 hours, so it's been a bit hectic, but I started off at breakfast time talking to CBS and then went to the Global Affairs Council, where I had a really, really interesting exchange about a lot of the wider issues, not just US-Ireland, but talking about everything from Ukraine to neutrality, our military neutrality in Ireland. Then I spent some time visiting with the Lieutenant Governor, who's really interesting, Juliana. I'd met her briefly before. We talked a lot about the work I did at the UN on I chaired the Council on the Status of Women, the Commission, rather, on the Status of Women. And she's interested. Apparently, there's a year of a woman coming up here in Chicago, so she's interested in that. I then spoke at the City Club. City Club of Chicago.
Yes.
Yes, the City Club, where I focused on the economic aspects of the relationship, met some business clients, and then I came here. So it's been a hectic day.
Yes, it sounds like it. So I want to be conscious of our time, and I have one pressing question that I've had for a while. So, you know, what can a polarized country like America learn from an agreement like the Good Friday Agreement?
Well, look, the Good Friday Agreement, as I said, is a model in its own right of the resolution of a violent situation, and that's recognised by countries who are locked into violence. But the United States and your term polarisation, you know, that's a different context. I think one of the aspects of the agreement that, you know, John Hume, one of the architects of the agreement, said, you don't make peace with your friends, and you don't solve situations of polar tensions by talking to the people who think like you. You have to talk to people who oppose your views, who have different views. So I think the idea of dialogue across the aisle, which used to be, I understand, a feature of US politics and that has now disappeared, is something that the Good Friday Agreement, you know, sort of was very much a reflection of that ability to reach across. I think that's important. I also think that, you know, the Good Friday Agreement, as I said, took years and years of investment and hard work and of people understanding process. And I think there's a tendency here sometimes in the United States to rush to position and to rush to judgment, having a little more debate and dialogue at civic level amongst people as opposed to just amongst politicians would be good. We like to talk and debate in Ireland, and I think that that in its own right as a way of understanding the other, hearing the other, is very important.
Right, yeah. So I'm interested, do you see what's happening in our country right now? Does that echo anything that you've seen in the past? You know, that the conflict, and what's kind of perceived as this profound, unhealable divide? You know, it feels a little bit like, at least growing up in this country right now, seeing the differences between our two parties, it feels like there's no going back from here. What would you say to that perceived notion?
Well, look, when President Biden was in Ireland last week, he told us that he was asked by the Chinese president to describe America in one word. And the word he used was possibilities. Mm-hmm. And I must say, that speaks to me about what you can do. If you consider your own history, where you came from, the periods you've been through, whether it's been, you know, coming to Europe during the Second World War, well, your own liberation originally coming to Europe during the Second World War, civil rights disturbances, your experience in Afghanistan, in Vietnam, chronologically inverted there. You have a can-do attitude here in the United States. It's marked you out from the beginning, politically, economically, in every way. I've no reason to believe that that capacity has gone now. I think that the challenges you're facing they're eminently dealable with, but you don't manage to build a new phase of a society or a community without this dialogue and without listening. And if it's a dialogue of the deaf, society will continue to be locked into its polar positions. So, you know, the idea that you find a way through to listening to each other and to working, you know, at a political level together, I think is eminently doable. I don't agree with your question, if I may say, that there's no way back.
Right.
And there's always, for the United States in particular, always a way forward.
Right. It's really inspiring. So I want to move the notion of that towards economics, right? President Biden made it a point to talk about the economy and the partnership with Ireland in his speech at Ulster University. Mm-hmm. And it also seems like an important principle to you, something that you uphold. So with that first understanding, talk to me about how the continued partnership between our two countries, how will the economic prosperity continue with our partnership?
Look, we're in a sweet spot. I don't think it's ever been as strong as it currently is. The United States is the number one foreign direct investor in Ireland. The investment into Ireland funds 200,000 jobs in Ireland. That's on a population of 5 million. That's very considerable. It's a two-way street, though. And I think it's pretty remarkable that a country the size of Ireland is the ninth foreign direct investor into the United States. So Irish investors are funding 100,000 jobs here in the United States across 50 states. I give you those numbers because we're embedded in each other's economies, and you know that we're in for the long haul. Some of the companies, the United States companies in Ireland, have been there for 50 years. The Irish companies are here 2-3 decades. This is an ongoing relationship. This phase of it, I think, is particularly important because for US investors, for the US economy, in a world where, you know, it's a very competitive environment out there, the US investors in Ireland know they're coming to an economy with the youngest educated workforce in Europe, highly talented, and an ecosystem on R&D that's second to none, politically stable country. That's a good package. But what's added on, if you come to Ireland, is that we're a member of the European Union. We're a gateway, an English language gateway, to a market of 440 million people, bigger than the US market, bigger labour market than the US market. Huge asset there. That's particularly the future of the relationship. And I think working Ireland to the US in the European context is particularly important now, given what we see happening with the war in Ukraine, given what we see happening with Chinese relationships in general globally. They're a huge player, Ireland has a good relationship with China, but we know there are tensions arising. We see that economic relationship with the United States working itself in through Europe, and in a very constructive way, I would hope, for both of us delivering.
Right. I've got two more questions left. You talked about the Ukraine war, and you talked about sustainable numbers for your population. And one of those number that pops out to me is the Ukrainian refugees in Ireland right now. So the whole world is dealing with this conflict, right? How is this foreign conflict affecting the economy of both our countries, and what in specifically are you doing about it in Ireland?
Well, what we're doing in Ireland in relation to Ukraine, first of all, is defending its sovereignty and its territorial integrity. And we're also front of the line in advocating that they become members of the European Union. 70,000, almost 80,000 Ukrainians in Ireland. That's about 4 million here in America. So big effort on our part. The actual cost to the Irish economy is mainly in the support of the refugees in Ireland. We're supporting them in every way. They have access to the job market, they have access to housing, they're supported social welfare issues. We're also contributing to the war effort financially. So I think over 70 million euros Ireland has currently given to support the government of Ukraine in sustaining itself. We are militarily neutral. We're not neutral in principle. Militarily neutral, which means that we don't give money to lethal force. We don't buy weapons, but we do support the effort in other ways. Demining, we support the purchase of protective gear for soldiers.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but do you think that, you know, effort to remain peaceful in that regards reflects what we're seeing in the Good Friday Agreement in Ireland's effort to remain nonviolent? Do you think that's a reflection?
Look, we're militarily neutral, but we're never neutral on principle. So that neutrality, you know, to be frank, isn't a factor in the Good Friday Agreement in any way. But it is a feature in terms of how Ireland assumes its foreign policy responsibilities. And of course, the situation in Northern Ireland is much more of a domestic situation, really.
Something that you talked about in your speech that I really was interested in is your understanding about restorative justice. What would you say to those worried about legacy issues and, you know, the enforcement of restorative justice policies? What would you say people worried, and what would you say people who are fired up about that?
Well, look, our view on this is that every victim has a right to a resolution of the situation that in many cases families faced, that we want to see their legal entitlements respected. We regard it as a matter of human rights that people are held accountable. It's a matter of international law and order that those norms are respected. I mentioned the European Court on Human Rights, I've mentioned the Council of Europe, all of the international bodies that deal with issues around restorative justice, around basic human rights and entitlements post-conflict, all agree with the Irish government. So this is something I would say to the people who are concerned about it, that the Irish government is doing its absolute utmost in its relationship with the United Kingdom to convince them to pause this not well thought through process in terms of the legislation they have in their parliament.
So for my last question, is there anything that you think that I should highlight in my story about your trip here?
Just the warmth and the depth of the relationship between Ireland and Chicago.
Yeah.
I grew up hearing about the Irish community in Chicago. It's one of the largest anywhere in the world, but certainly after New York, the largest in the United States. It's been a loyal and committed community here. So I've met people today who, you know, generationally have been involved in the life of Chicago, but have always kept links with their own families back in Ireland.
Yeah.
And so the best of being Irish is that you embrace the place you're living in, that you contribute to where you are, but you never forget from where you came.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Pleasure.